The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Support for this show comes from The Calling Academy, using research and online courses to empower people from all faiths and spiritual paths to live a full life. Learn how to answer your call at callingacademy.com.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today is Felicia Ruiz, a natural foods activist, traditional herbalist, and health-based private chef with deep family roots in northern New Mexico. I want to read you something that she wrote. "My kitchen," she wrote, "is a living and breathing space where I translate my cultural knowledge into modern dishes that nourish, heal, stimulate, and delight the palate." Her essay, "Learning the Personalities of Plants," appears in the November-December issue of Spirituality and Health magazine, and I am very much looking forward to discussing something about which I know nothing. So, Felicia Ruiz, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, the article was fascinating. And there's a lot that I hope we can cover in a very short time of 20 minutes. But I wanted to start with something that just really spoke to me. So you wrote this in the essay. You said that your people's songs, dances, and foods were often celebrated and kept alive by disguising them and marrying them into Catholic and Spanish traditions.
Yeah.
And that really spoke to me, because that's very true for Jews who were forced to undergo, in the late 15th century in Spain and Portugal, the church gave them basically three options: convert, run away, or die. And many of those who converted kept their Judaism alive by disguising it as Catholic and Spanish tradition. So tell us a little bit about how your family upbringing and how they preserved their heritage.
Well, where my family is from, in northern New Mexico, a lot of people there are a blend of different, some might not want to admit that they have indigenous blood, but almost everyone has an indigenous ancestor. Maybe they don't know about them. And a lot of the traditions that we follow, they're just woven into so many different things that we do there. Some of the sacred sites that were built on the missions were built on sacred sites. We have different things like Holy Earth. But if you've ever been to New Mexico, there's a space there called Chimayo, and you can go there and get holy dirt that's used for healing. But those places, a lot of them were built on sacred sites. And so some of the people, throughout, you know, generations, they would keep those traditions alive, even though they had to incorporate them, like so many other indigenous people, into the Catholic faith. And that right there is just a perfect example. People that would make, you know, pilgrimage to Chimayo, they would get the sacred earth and they would say a prayer, they would say a rosary, or they would ask, you know, help to the different saints and to the Virgin and Jesus, although a lot of the people might not know, and many do know, that they're, that dirt, that sacred holy dirt where that church was built, was actually built on a place that was revered for long before the missionaries got there.
So, Felicia, I was just curious, are people interested in reclaiming that heritage, the indigenous part of themselves, or are a lot of people just, I don't want to know anything about it?
Oh, no, quite the opposite. Many of my cousins, who all grew up being labeled Hispanic, we are just excited to find out more about our native ancestry. Depending which family you're from in New Mexico, especially, some people, they shy away from being labeled anything but Spanish. They like to think of themselves only as Spanish, just because that was part of assimilation. So for me and for many people in my family, we really try to reclaim our indigenous ancestry, because that's to me, I feel like we're giving our ancestors a voice that they didn't have. And we're in a space now that we can do that. So for me, it's through food, it's through medicine, it's through sun dancing, it's through all of the different things that have been taken away from us, reclaiming that history. It's very important, at least for me, you know, to share with my daughter and the rest of my community.
How old is your daughter?
She's 16.
So is she open to this, interested in this?
Oh, very much. Yes. Yeah. She's still a typical 16-year-old, but she obviously has been around our foods and our dances, the gardening, all of the different herbs, all of the different things that, you know, I have been able to bring forth to our table that my mother shared with me. I feel like my generation, the ones that are interested in this, that we actually have a lot more that we're bringing to our children than our parents did for us, because they were in a time that they weren't allowed to, or they were discouraged to do so.
You said a moment ago that this is one of the ways you're giving your ancestors a voice. And you talk about in the essay that your ancestors, your elders, your teachers also gave the plants a voice, you know, that they would talk about the plants.
Well, they didn't give the plants a voice. We're just taught that the plants already had a voice. I think it's like a shortwave radio. You know, if you're in tune, you can listen to different things that, you know, you might not have if you're not tuning in properly. And to me, that's a simple way of explaining how those plants, we're not giving them a voice. They already have one. We're just trying to tune into what they're saying.
Okay, even better. So share with us a little bit some of the plants, some of the things you learn from them, some of the things that they say.
Some of the plants are very gentle. And when you almost feel like you need something soothing in your life, certain plants seem to present themselves to you by way of a different family member. Maybe you're out on your nature walk and something just calls to you. And I think we've all heard that saying, you know, something just calling to me. Well, in our culture, everything is alive. So sometimes when you hear a plant calling to you, it's not just a phrase. It's not just a saying. It's a truth that plant is really talking to you. And many times that plant that's calling to you is actually trying to communicate with you. They're so healing. They're just alive and they're present all over. But many of us walk blindly throughout our day without listening. And so that's what I mean, you know, in simple terms by the shortwave radio. If you're not into, you're not going to hear what they're saying. But once you kind of get in tune with what you need to hear from Mother Earth, from nature, those things, those voices, they actually become more loud.
So can you share with us some ways that people might use to get in tune?
I think the best suggestion would be to go outside, to just go outside and be present. I think a lot of us are inside, we're by our computers or in a cubicle, or we're in a space that doesn't even offer any type of connection. I always tell people, take off your shoes and actually feel what the earth feels like beneath your feet, because we're very disconnected. And in my culture, if you want to show your reverence, you know, to Mother Earth, we actually get down on our knees and we put our forehead to the ground. And I feel like that's just a way of like bowing to just this amazing presence. And that is dirt. Mm. That is the earth.
So what if you're living in a city and you don't really have access to that? Can you, this is going to sound a little strange, but I've been in, you know, farmers markets in where I live, but also in Jerusalem, in Istanbul, many different places in India, where the vegetables are just brought in from the farm. And there is a sense of aliveness to them. Can you hear? I was just wondering about beans, because you talk about beans being your best friends, being our best mm-hmm. friends. You know, when you see a big barrel full of beans at an open market, even though they're not, you know, connected, they've been harvested, I still get a sense that there's a message there, that they're saying something, not that I can understand it. Can you get it
but
from
I think
another?
Yeah. I think what you're saying right now is exactly what I'm trying to help people get to. Just your description of what you see at the farmer's market, and you're trying to understand what they're saying, that it feels different than if you were just shopping in a traditional grocery store. Something about a plant being grown, you know, with thoughtfulness and mindfulness and caring, those people that are picking those plants, they care about those plants, and they're being brought to the outdoor market, and they're still outside, they're freshly picked. It's just very different than, say, something that's been shipped from Argentina on an airplane or on a ship, and they've had this long voyage. They're exhausted by the time they get to our grocery store. So what you're feeling is they're just still in that sense of bliss, you know?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Can you relate the story you write about in the magazine article, Learning the Personalities of Plants, about in middle school and being called a beaner?
Yes. Well, I think I was maybe third or grade, and I went to school in Phoenix, Arizona, and where I went to school was a very white school, and I had been called many things, but this was something that someone had called me, and I knew from the way that they were calling me this word that it wasn't good, but I didn't quite understand what it meant. And clearly the child had heard it from their parents or someone else in their family. So I went home, and I remember taking the bus home and just thinking, you know, why did they call me that? You know, yeah, we do eat beans every day, but I like them. And, you know, I really thought to myself, this girl probably, you know, what does she eat at home every day? She was eating TV dinners and frozen dinners and frozen pizzas. And I just remember talking to my mom about it, and she, you know, explained what that meant, and just how much she actually loved beans herself. And she told me that when she was a little girl, she said, when I grow up, I don't want to ever eat beans again. She had enough, you know, in her lifetime. And now that she's in her 70s, she says, you know, how silly that was to have said that so many years ago, because she can't imagine not eating them every day. Because I do think it's something that we crave, because it's such a part of our childhood. And that was kind of like the story. They're mm-hmm. around every day, and they become your friends. And when you don't see your friends for a long time, you miss them.
Yeah, I'm going to read the one sentence you say about this, because I thought it was just very beautiful. You write about this girl who called you that. You write, yes, I was going home to another pot of beans, but she was probably going home to another frozen lasagna. So, you know, in a sense, you are what you eat, right? If you're eating,
exactly.
Yeah, right. If you're eating these the way you're eating, your heart opens, it sounds like. Though you do talk about, and I want to just bring this in, so it's not all friendly beans. You talk about the pesky brother green chili. And
yes.
That made your grandfather curse and sweat. So tell us a little bit about why we need our pesky brother green chili.
Well, I think there's always someone in the family that just really annoys you, but they're your family, and you know, you still welcome them in your home, even though, you know, you might roll your eyes or they might bother you. They're still always welcome. And for me, like, I just think of green chili in that sense, is that he's all, you know, he does, he gets you all upset sometimes, and you might curse because you can't believe how hot it was, and other times he wasn't that hot. And, you know, like I said in the story, I have a really good memory of my grandfather. He would keep a little hanky in his pocket, and one time the chili had made him sweat so much he had to take that hanky out, and he was kind of cursing under his breath because it had been too hot for him. But we always, you know, we get mad, but then there he is again tomorrow for breakfast.
He's pesky, but he's still your brother. Mm-hmm. But you also say that I'm going to read it because it's just nice the way you write. Not your grandfather, but the green chili. So his fiery temper somehow relieves my headaches. So is there a medicinal quality to green chili that way?
Yeah, so green chili, it contains capsaicin, so it's like cayenne. You know, there's a lot of science actually behind eating different chilies, how they're really good for relieving pain and releasing endorphins. So, you know, even though chili is a pain, he actually can take your headaches away. He might cause you a headache at first because he's annoying, but then you take some more and he makes your headache go away.
Oh, fabulous. So of all the things that you mentioned in the essay, the one that spoke to me most powerfully was Mother Blue Corn. And I have a deep, regard for, connection with Holy Mother, and not simply Mother Earth, but the Divine Mother as the mother of all reality. And mm-hmm. It seems to be what, I mean, you call blue corn, you know, the mother. So tell us more about blue corn.
Well, for the Pueblo people, blue corn is our mother. She is present in so many different ceremonies from the moment we're born until our passing to the next world. And for me, like, she's just been present. And I think of that like this, like a mother goddess. You know, she's always there, but she's there in a very nurturing way. When I was writing this story, what came to mind were all of the times that she's been present for me, and they've all been through major passages of my life. And it's always been in a beautiful way, like something in, like I said in the story with the Roboso, like kind of just taking you in and wrapping you up and just making you feel really safe and warm. And I can't think of what I'm trying to say. Just she encompasses everything that I think of as a mother, and she just happens to be blue corn.
Mm. Well, I was very, I mean, I love blue corn. I had no idea there was a connection between the corn and the mother. It was really very fascinating. If people want to learn from you more about all of this fascinating stuff, I mean, the article is short, our conversation is short, where can they go to learn more?
Well, on my website, ruizsinplace.com, I do all sorts of different teachings here in Phoenix, where I live, but I also teach in other cities. I give lectures. I was most recently at the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C., and I was privileged to sit on a panel with other women chefs and talk about our indigenous food sovereignty and the need for us to get back to our traditional foods for health and healing. So although I'm here in Phoenix, I try to be all over. You know, there's a lot of work for our people in terms of getting their diet back to where we used to be before contact.
Right, right. But also sharing that wisdom with the rest of us. So
of course.
Yeah,
The more everybody knows about our indigenous foods, the more healing that's going to take place for everyone.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great place to leave it. So thank you very much. My guest today was Felicia Ruiz, a natural foods activist, traditional herbalist, health-based private chef. Her essay, Learning the Personalities of Plants, appears in the November-December issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. You can learn more about her work on her website, RuizInPlace.com. Felicia, thank you so much for talking with us on Essential Conversations.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Support for this show comes from The Calling Academy, using research and online courses to empower people from all faiths and spiritual paths to live a full life. Learn how to answer your call at callingacademy.com. Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is a project of Spirituality and Health magazine. Please log into spiritualityhealth.com to subscribe to the magazine in print or digital formats and download the iTunes app for this podcast. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker, and our program coordinator and executive producer is Alma Tassi. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.